This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to a special edition iFanboy podcast on All-Star Superman. Welcome to the special edition iFanboy podcast on All-Star Superman. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Chris Niesman.
Hello.
Paul Montgomery.
Ahoy there.
And Dr. Ryan Hobb.
Hi, everybody. I'm not a doctor yet.
Well, I like to call you doctor because you're our scientist. You're a resident scientist.
Fair enough. Professor? Can I be professor?
The professor.
The professor, Dr. Ryan Hobb. This is the animation panel. We convene to discuss these movies.
This is why I look forward to DC's animated features, because I get to talk to you guys.
Yeah, it's our special grouping, like a strike force. Also, Superman is the latest in the DC Universe animated original films. It's the 10th film. But before we get to that, you know, we recorded this the day the film came out, which was Tuesday the 22nd. And unfortunately, we were met with the sad news that the writer of the film, Dwayne McDuffie, suddenly passed away. He has actually been very integral, not just in these films, but in DC animation in general and the whole Bruce Timm machine. And he's written a bunch of these movies. So it was very sad news on the day that his latest film was released that we learned that he passed on. And it sort of cast a pall over everything. I got the news actually while literally watching the movie.
So it really changed the tenor of my experience. So it's going to be an interesting discussion. The last half to one third for me was a bit strange, but
terrible news. He was one of the guys in comics that I don't think that he was nearly as heralded as he should have been. He was one of the guys that would be in the trenches that, you know, if DC or Marvel needed a guy to step in and write a ship, you know, he was that guy. And the comics are poorer today because of his loss, but certainly, in the animated stuff he did and all of his comics and Milestone in particular, something that, I mean, the guy left his mark on comics.
I think that people probably know him best from the animated world, but he's been in comics since the 80s. He's worked in editorial. He's, as Chris said, started Milestone. Oh, I guess a company that was designed to promote a more racially diverse crowd because
Milestone Media
superheroes can be rather monochromatic, and in addition to that, doing some great comic writing. But he's also a guy who spent most of the last decade doing really important superhero stuff in terms of the Justice League cartoon, the Superman cartoon, and he's been one of the main guys on the DC Universe animated movies. I saw him speak about the Justice League Crisis on Two Earths, which he also wrote. At the time, he'd said he had a bunch of scripts, so it'll be interesting to see if any more of his films come out.
No, well, certainly hope so.
Going back, I mean, if you look at Justice League of America or JLU, if he didn't write the episode, he was probably a story editor on that episode, just the majority of them. And going back to, you know, sort of my childhood, Static Shock.
Yep.
You know, it was a great Saturday morning cartoon. So influential in that as well. Created the character.
Influential is a great word. You could argue that the Justice League cartoon was some of the best, or all the Bruce Timm cartoon, some of the best superhero work in any medium in the last 20 years, and he's responsible for a lot of that. So I think, as someone said on Twitter, he's probably responsible for most people's view on superheroes because more people have seen the cartoons than have read the books.
Oh, sure. I mean, and we talk about the Timverse so much, especially on these shows. But, you know, it's Bruce Timm and Paul Dini and Dwayne McDuffie. I mean, it's a huge part of all that. Yeah. Sure. Yeah,
pretty, especially today, just the timing of it couldn't have been. I mean, it's never good news, but the timing of it was different. Yeah. Certainly shocking.
My buddy Sal, you know, who I work with, walks in. He's like, "Oh, this can't be true. Not on today. I mean, this has got to be some sort of, you know, weird, you know, Mark Twain thing that, you know, tomorrow we're going to find out that he's fine." It's just, the timing on it was just pretty surreal.
So let's do the best thing we can do to honor him, which is talk about his work, because, you know, there's not much else we can do other than appreciate what he did. And what in All-Star Superman we have here is a 70-minute adaptation of one of the, I think it's safe to say, modern classics.
Oh, yeah.
One of the seminal Superman
stories. A daunting task, if there was one, in adapting, you know, comics to the screen.
Were you worried? Were you worried whenever they announced it?
Nope. I wasn't worried because I know they usually handle these things very well, but then I was like, I wouldn't want to have to do it just because, I mean, it's the nature of the beast is it's a 12-issue maxi series. It's beautifully drawn by Frank Quitely. It's a great bunch of scripts from Grant Morrison, and it's very episodic in nature, though there is a through line in it. So there is something that you can do to make this into one, you know, feature film instead of, say, a mini series or something like that. And I think that they figured out the right balance to do so. So I was pretty impressed with it. That said, when you're coming right from the books, now I just reread the Absolute Edition just today, waiting for the UPS guy to finally come with the movie. So I was watching everything happen on the screen that I saw, you know, in the book just a few hours before that. And there's a couple of segments missing, but
sure.
It really doesn't. It doesn't hurt that much. And when you're talking about 70-minute movies, it's going to happen. And I'm glad that they didn't try to shoehorn everything into it and just make it a bunch of like montages, basically.
No, I agree. It's you know. First of all, you know, I asked you if you were worried. I was kind of petrified that they were making this into a 70-minute feature. This is, you know, All-Star Superman for me. It is my favorite comic of the last decade. You could drop the name All-Star Superman and rename it Superman is awesome, because that's what that's what the series is about. It was 12 issues.
I would actually subtitle it, "We're talking to you kids."
Yeah. Superman is awesome. Listen up. It was 12 issues of Grant Morrison explaining why Superman is interesting, why Superman is an amazing character. And whenever you take something that has, you know, the depth of what he was able to create there, and whatever, you know, magic pill Grant Morrison was able to take, you know, whenever he was writing this, I mean, he's the Dave Kingman of comics. I mean, you know, say what you will about the guy, sometimes it's a strikeout or sometimes it's a 700-foot home run, and this is definitely one of his home runs. Whenever they announced that they were going to do an animated feature of it, it's like, oh man, this could be an epic fail.
Well, I think it's interesting that you mentioned that it's your favorite Superman of the past decade, because...
No, it's my favorite comic of the last decade.
Sorry, favorite comic of the last decade, because I recently read the article Mike Romo wrote, fellow staff writer and iFanboy wrote on the site about the Superman 2000 pitch that Grant Morrison, Mark Miller, Mark Waid, and Tom Peyer put together, and I haven't had a chance to go back and read all the comics associated with this, like Paul assigned me to do. Sorry, Paul. Mm-hmm. But I did watch the movie, and it's fascinating having read what Grant wanted to do in the year 2000 juxtaposed with what he was able to do in All-Star Superman.
Well, it was basically what the pitch, which we will link in the show notes if you want to go back and read Mike's article about it. It's also Superman basically seems to be, damn, they wouldn't do my book, so I'm just going to do it as this thing. So a lot of it, you can almost imagine what a full line of Superman books in this style would have been. But let's get to the film. I thought it was very good. I thought McDuffie's work in terms of adapting the story was fantastic. But one disappointment I had was, to me, the best issue of the series was issue 10, mm-hmm. which was the one where he basically goes around the world doing stuff one last time. And I thought that could have very easily been handled in a very quick sequence. Because the one part we missed from the comic series was each issue was about a different aspect of Superman. And the one we didn't really get in the movie was the way, how did he interact with the people of Earth, and what did he do for the people of Earth? So that was the only thing I was disappointed by, not really seeing that.
Yeah, issue 10, he basically,
that's where he did the
cures
kids, the
all
kids.
Illness.
Yeah.
Which is one of the coolest ideas ever, is saying, well, why don't you take the Kandor people and, you know, let them out of the bottle and allow them to basically go on like fantastic voyages through people's bodies and fix, you know, everything going wrong with their blood cells and stuff like that. And I think their new operation is on Mars. Like, they make a little platform up there, and so they have a tiny little city on Mars. So they can't, you know, Superman couldn't figure out how to make them larger again. But he did say, you know, why don't you be the greatest like medical fighting force ever? So they're like basically like nanobots or something. But That's a great issue. The other things that are missing, the Jimmy Olsen, the Superman,
the Doomsday,
Olsen, the Doomsday. that's missing. And then the other one was
the Bizarro.
Stuff,
well, also
right?
The stuff, the issue with the other Supermen coming to the farm in Kansas.
Yes.
Yeah. That was understandably missing, because that was the kind of the overarching story, and that Superman lives on. But you don't really know it until the very end that he's been in this story earlier. And that was okay to take out, because they were sort of changing the ending a little bit. And you, to do that, you had to remove all that stuff. And I understood why they did. They couldn't put everything in. But
I thought they made good choices in what parts
Extremely
they
spliced in. The spirit of the story is completely there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only way to do it, and the only way that, you know, me being a selfish All-Star Superman nerd, would be, instead of a 70-minute feature, I would have loved to have seen, you know, 12 half-hour episodes that sure. break down each one. But, you know, that's just in Chris's little world that would happen. But I thought the choices that they made for an engaging movie, and I'm really interested, you know, obviously everyone here has read the series and now watched this. I want to get the opinion from people that haven't read All-Star Superman in what kind of a movie it is, because I'm so close to the source material that's what I'm judging it against. You know, right there, it's like, oh, okay, well, this, I love this part of the series. You know, this is one of my favorite scenes. You know, oh, there's Jimmy Olsen in a dress. That's hilarious. So I really want to know what people who haven't read it will think of it, because I don't know.
I watched it with somebody who hadn't read the comics, my girlfriend Julie, and she scoffed a lot at the Silver Age wackiness of it.
You should dump her right now.
it's a trap.
Well, I just don't think, I mean, she's just, I mean.
What did she scoff at? What were the elements?
Well, I think, okay, so she scoffed at some of the bigger, wackier science ideas, which I kind of just kept, like, reminding her, like, no, it's Silver Age. It's Silver Age. This is Grant Morrison's ode to the Silver Age.
It's like Solaris, which actually is a Morrison creation, but it feels like it's something that's.
But from, yeah, and like where so he's great. Feeding the Sun Eater by pounding stars out with his cosmic
hand. That was
hand.
Awesome.
I so agree, cool. It's awesome. But if you're not like inundated
dump her.
Comics,
dump her.
Viewing the world in
pills. Nope. Dump
priorities,
her.
Man.
I'm angry that she would scoff at that because that's fucking awesome.
I think she also scoffed at the romance a little bit. I think she just didn't quite latch on to the Lois Clark super.
Well, that's I can see that because one of the things I've talked about in my previous analyses of the animated world is that for some reason the animated Lois and Clark relationship is bizarre. It doesn't really seem to work in the animated world. I don't know.
The animated world, it's always bizarre. It's bizarre, period.
No, but it's really bizarre. I mean, like if you rewatch the Superman the animated series, they don't even have a relationship. There's no even hint of it until the very end. They seem to totally issue it for whatever reason. But seriously, you should dump her.
Yeah, seriously.
Oh, but let's back up for just 1 second. Tell people who haven't seen it or maybe don't know. The quick story is Superman in the beginning, he saves, and there's an expedition to the sun, which Lex Luthor sabotages. Superman saves it. And in the course of doing so, his cells get overexposed to sun energy, which his cells cold.
His body can't process all of the light that's coming into his body.
Right, so it starts to break down his body. He's dying. So this is Superman's last story. He's dying,
cancer year.
He's going to he's going to do as much as he can in the time he's got left, and this is his.
So he's going to walk across the country. Oh, different story.
It's like taking a cactus and putting it underwater in the tropics. Like it's gonna drown and die of too much sunlight.
We'll take
that old chestnut.
Yeah.
And the only other thing I didn't like was I thought Anthony LaPaglia's Lex, I thought the quality of his voice was good. I liked the fact that it was sandpapery and sort of thuggish, but I didn't like his performance.
Oh, interesting.
I didn't really feel like it fit. I agree with you, Carl.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm with Carl. Well, it was really similar to Perry White, and there were times when they were talking to each other. You're like, is this one guy doing two slightly different voices?
Well, Perry White was Ed Asner.
Yes, so Granny Goodness.
So I was thinking Granny Goodness at all times.
That's tough. That's a tough one to get around.
I was thinking
around.
Lou Grant.
Don't besmirch Ed Asner.
Nobody's besmirching.
Other than that, I thought the voices were strong. I thought Christina Hendricks was a great Lois Lane.
Amazing, yeah, I loved it.
James Denton was a good Superman. Like, I don't think he stood out either way.
I think he fit with the tone of the kind of Superman that's in the story, Superman. Which is very mellow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just very, very relaxed Superman. Like, you know.
Well, that's part of Grant Morrison's vision in Superman 2000 is that why would Superman ever be worried? Like, what's he got to worry about? He's Superman. So he has a very relaxed, affable handshake quick with a smile Superman.
This Superman, and it's in the comic and it's in the movie, is that he's a very father-like figure. He really is godlike in that way. And he's here to tend to humanity. And he sees the best in us. And he's very fatherly towards humanity. And that's one of the reasons I love this book and how kind of Morrison taps into that, you know, kind of like hyper humanity of Superman. And that's, you know, that's really kind of the heart of the story is he's the outsider, but he loves this planet. He loves humanity so much. And I think it shines through the movie almost as well as it does in the comic.
Yeah. Another interesting thing about the film was, for a good part of it, it's a drama.
I love that, too. Because, so much of these Bruce Timm movies are just clobberfests, especially like something like Superman Doomsday. Like, it's most of the movie is fighting, and that's always great because they're so well choreographed and animated. But I realized about two-thirds of the way through this movie, I'm like, there's barely been any fighting, and I love that. It's so quiet and understated.
I think that could be why they're coming off as somewhat worried about the film, because... Yeah. I mean, there are certainly action scenes and there's some great action sequences, but the first half of the film, there's like one action sequence that's short and the rest of it's just people talking.
This is not a film for 6-year-olds.
No. But it was great in that sense. But I was surprised. Ryan's right. Normally the Bruce Timm, these films particularly lean towards action because that they don't have a lot of time and they got to sell these things.
I feel like this is the kind of product that's a reward for them doing things like the Superman Batman movies.
Yeah.
Which they're not selling huge numbers, but those are probably their better sellers.
Apocalypse was great. I really enjoyed that.
Oh, yeah, it's just
one great choreographed fight scene after another.
And another thing is that when this line was originally announced, it was said, we're going to animate in the style of the art of the books. And that didn't always work out. But in this instance, now clearly they couldn't make it look like Frank Quitely all the time. No. There was a few shots where I was like, whoa. I mean, the first time you see Ma Kent when she's young, I actually, my mouth fell open because it looked exactly like a Frank Quitely drawing.
See, I was more nervous. So Chris mentioned that he was really nervous about how they were going to adapt the story, but I was more nervous about how they were going to adapt the art.
So what did you think about it?
I liked it a lot.
I was nervous about that as well. Man.
So Chris is a bundle of nerves. I'm only nervous about one thing.
He's the anti-Superman.
I mean, this is right there with what they're going to make a movie out of Watchmen. Oh, boy.
It seems like for whatever reason, the Bruce Timm animation style, they love to try and accent Superman's cheekbones. This is a weird pet peeve I've had since the Tim Daly days. It was really bad in the early episodes of Doomsday. The Justice League and in Superman Doomsday. They always give him these really, they want to give him defined cheekbones and make him just have like perfect Zoolander-esque bone structure. And I often think that it makes him just look older and tired.
It does. It makes him look like he's 50 years old.
But in this, they pulled it off because if they ever did that, it was never a hard line. It was always with shading or it was in profile and it worked. I don't know. His face or angles looked like a Frank Quitely face in a way that I didn't come across as overly detailed in the way that Frank Quitely's art does on the page.
Yeah.
And the body type. Superman was that big, burly, barrel chested body type.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
That was really nice.
Quietly, Superman is always really doughy looking.
Yep.
And I like that. And they kind of split the difference here a little bit. And, you know, that was. I like, you know, his Superman always looks kind of soft and kindly, but there's still a power behind it.
Especially Clark is really sort of dumpy looking.
Yes.
And I think they did a particularly good job there. Also, when
he
I
does
think,
the best Clark, best when Clark.
I,
period.
Yeah. When I think Quitely, I think and All-Star Superman, I think of his take on Luthor, and just because the bald head just sort of lends itself to Quitely's style and that great purple and green costume that he wears, which isn't his robot suit. It's a weird, like, sort of leprechaun kind of costume. But it looks kind of cool. And I think they captured that very well here. The other thing that's really cool, it's not, I mean, we're mentioning the character designs, but also just the frame composition. It just totally looks like a Frank Quitely world. And there are sequences in this that are sort of like shot for shot remakes of the sequences in the comics, like that we mentioned, the forging the star, a lot of the stuff in the Fortress of Solitude, there are shots like that are direct recreations of panels, and that really like grounds it and brings it home. Like since I just read the book today, it was just amazing. It was like
fresh in your mind.
It was almost like a motion comic almost, just because like there are exact shots like that scene, the scene where the future telescope.
Yep.
Where he's at that console when they're in the Titanic that he
did
has.
Did your girlfriend scoff at the future telescope?
Yeah.
Come on.
Sorry. But they
the future telescope is awesome.
She scoffed the hardest at the Fortress of Solitude itself, which
come on.
Well, listen.
The coolest Fortress of Solitude ever.
But it's kind of a, I mean, don't you think that's kind of just a guy thing? Like, it's the den personified, but it's like the hyper den, the super den. It's the retreat.
The thing I like about this version of the Fortress of Solitude is every other version is about the crystals. And, you know, it's all about making it look like you're inside a glacier. But
it's all
here,
the Donner version, yeah.
Yeah, but here it's like, you know, it's like the Batcave, but for Superman.
Well, it's the Silver Age. It's the Silver Age.
It's more a laboratory than a laboratory, repository, zoo.
And a gallery.
It's
where Superman goes to be even more awesome than he is anywhere else.
I love the key, the really heavy key.
That was great. I love that. Was great.
He can pick up.
It always reminds me of that scene in Futurama where the professor has a teaspoon of dark matter so heavy that each pound weighs over 1,000 pounds.
So speaking of the key, that's one of my favorite scenes in the book and in the movie, and I'm glad that they kept it in the movie. It's not the original scene where we see the super heavy dwarf star key. It's where the Kryptonian astronauts have infiltrated the fortress while Superman has been off on other business, and the male Bar-El. Kryptonian, yeah, Bar-El, kind of like tosses the key at one of Superman's robot servants, and it rips his arm off. But there's this amazing moment where Superman stops and leans down to the robot to see if he's okay. And this is a robot that he has actual feelings about, that this is someone with strength preying on someone with less strength. Mm-hmm. And it's like this amazing moment of humanity. And I'm just like, you know, that moment, that page kind of boils down that character a lot for me. And I'm so glad that they kept it into the movie.
Really? I disagree.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, to
is
me,
this
that's
something
just
that your girlfriend told you.
No, she had left by that point. But I mean, to me, that's just like if somebody threw a rock at my laptop, I'm gonna check on my laptop, make sure it's still functioning.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm just saying, like, I guess maybe that scene just hit a little too close to home with what's been going on in Jeopardy with Hal and the robots are gonna take over soon.
No, because there's also another payoff to that too when he goes
to face off against
Solaris and the robot butler army goes after, you know, with him, and then Robot 7 has to atone and
that was cool. I like that,
to save Superman. It's
they're not just laptops, Ryan. They're not just laptops.
I'd still be pissed if someone threw a rock at my laptop.
Oh, sure, hell yeah.
Is it weird that now I'm trying to do the math to see if the entire Bottle City of Kandor put together could lift the key if Superman wasn't around? If, like, they all...
You know, you go. I'm sure the numbers are out there.
We have to get out of here.
Because there's little miniature Kryptonians. Sorry.
So I think we've established this is one of the better ones. I'm not sure where it falls in the continuum. I think I'm actually going to write an article about where it falls in the continuum. But I think this is definitely one of the really good ones.
Yeah.
I think it's tricky because it doesn't automatically lend itself to being a feature, but it's the best feature that could be made from this material, which is just like perfect comic material. Even I was listening to, there's some great extras on here. We should mention that there's a commentary track with Bruce Timm and Grant Morrison, and Grant Morrison had expressed before the commentary started that he really enjoyed the film. And Bruce Timm is nervous throughout, saying that he's glad that he likes it. He hopes Frank quietly likes it. He really likes it and is very proud of it, but he just hopes that the audience likes it and embraces it because he knows that it's not.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He mentions screening The Red Hood at San Diego and the crowd going nuts over the ultra-violence and grittiness of it. It's totally not that.
It's the only one that I can think of out of the 10 features now that we have that's kind of an Elseworlds story. Everything else you can put in...
Well, the Gotham Knight anthology was pretty...
Does that count?
Yes, that's one of the 10.
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, that was just like shorts
Frontier. Crisis on Two Earths.
I was going to say Crisis on Two Earths. That's what I was thinking.
Crisis on Two Earths fits.
Yeah, that's actually a Morrison Quietly adaptation, kind of.
That's a JLA story.
And it's a Morrison Quietly adaptation. I think it's also the most kind of quiet, cerebral one that I remember, anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, this is the one that comes to mind. It's like, you know, if you were to play all of them, including the JLU stuff together, it's like, different Superman.
Yep.
You know,
sure.
I mean,
it's like we said earlier, it's an older Superman. He's a more mature, more stately.
More awesome.
More awesome, yes. I'm going to stand on that. You could rename this Superman is Awesome. And as Connor said, kids, you know, listen up.
Yeah, well, we're mentioning how just like sort of cerebral and sort of like it's about drama and relationships. There are really great action sequences in it, though. I really liked the parasite scene.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was really creepy. I love the design for Parasite.
And the visual representation of his powers and how he sucked the life out of people.
Oh, that was awesome.
Which isn't in the comics.
No, that was really cool.
How he saw everyone as sort of blobs of power. And that was creepy.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Tim's style, we know, is that team can do action. I mean, there's just no way around it. There's no arguing against it. They can do animate action. Now, we mentioned the extras. What we didn't mention was this showcase. Because there was none. There was no showcase for the first time in four movies? However many there have been?
Four or five.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's just a one-time thing or they're done, because I didn't go to the press screening for this one. I didn't find out.
How else am I ever going to have a Doom Patrol comic? Or animated.
I do know the collection they put together did not sell well at all. So that means there's no more shorts or what, but it was disappointing to learn. Because one of the things we've been looking forward to along with the films is the little 10-minute short, which features a character you're never going to see get its own movie. And it's always nice to see the Spectre or Green Arrow or somebody you'll never get to see at their own film. But this time there wasn't one. I wonder if we're going to see them in the future. We'll find out, I guess, next time. If there's no showcase short for Green Lantern, Emerald Knight, then we'll know they're done. But
Which, by the way, looks really, really good. They have a sneak peek of Emerald Knight, and it looks awesome.
Does it look better than the
last
upcoming live-action movie?
It does, yeah. Basically, they're bringing in Peggy Olson as Aresia, yeah, as the new recruit. And sort of the idea is Nathan Fillion as Hal Jordan is in line waiting. They're waiting to get their rings charged, so they're in line, and she's attracted to him, but she looks to him as a mentor, and he tells her a bunch of stories of like old stories of the Green Lanterns, and there's a Kilowog story,
Tales from the Core. Nice.
Abin Sur's story, and then they tell the planet
Mogo.
Yeah, they tell that story as well, and it's all different animation styles. It's a different animation house doing each one.
Oh, I just got a huge Woody. That is awesome.
So it's
Alan
really
Moore's going to be pissed.
It's sort of like Gotham.
That is Knights, awesome.
But there's going to be like a bookend sort of, and I think there's a main. Like Krona is coming, so there's an overarching story, but then there's these little 8 to 10 minute vignettes.
Oh, and Roddy
Piper is in it.
Now I'm just looking this up while Paul's been talking, and the film after Green Lantern Emerald Knights is scheduled to be Batman Year One,
right?
And according to this article I'm seeing, there's supposedly a Catwoman showcase, so maybe there's showcases aren't dead. Now that's unless they haven't killed it; they could always have killed it. We're not going to find out until this actually comes out, but
Batman Year One makes Chris happy.
Yeah, so we'll find out. So we got some more of these, at least a couple more. It's funny because we mention this every episode, but I always just wait for the announcement to say these are dead, just because that's my pessimistic attitude towards these wonderful films. But contradictory sales reports online seem to show that they're still doing relatively well, mm-hmm. if not spectacular. There's only been a couple of films that sold really well. That was the Superman Doomsday. The Superman Batman Public Enemies and Batman Under the Red Hood. The rest of in the same.
We've got a new Batman live action movie coming up, and Green Lantern, of course. And I have a feeling that the live action, major motion picture releases will help fuel some of the animated sales as well.
The other thing I thought of for the first time the other day was, when does Bruce Timm get tired of this? Maybe never. He just wants to work, and that's
funny. Hey man, I think he likes being on Conan, so that's hopefully it's working for him.
But how long have you been doing iFanboy, Connor?
Not as long as he's been doing the animated shows.
That's a good point.
He's been doing them since all the way back to not just the movies. But anyway, that was just a thought that came to me, and I went, "Oh God, why did I think that?"
Was there anything that we didn't like about this movie? We usually do like a gush fest, and then we try to come up with something.
I didn't really love LaPaglia's Lex Luthor. I thought the voice quality was good, but the acting wasn't. I thought.
But you're wrong about that, though.
But what did you guys think about the ending?
Because they changed the ending a bit, just real quick. They show Lex Luthor giving the instructions to the recipe for Superman.
Yeah, that broke.
Okay, I've got some reasoning for this.
Paul, did you call that ludicrous?
No, I said it broke my science brain.
Oh, I thought somebody called it ludicrous. Go ahead.
No.
Okay.
I liked it. I thought it was cool.
And here's some reasoning on this, is that Morrison has, I don't know if he's come out and flat said it or kind of intimated it, that Quintum is actually Luthor. Time traveling Luthor.
No, that's a theory that's been online. That's not,
yeah, it's a
sense. In fact, if you have the Absolute Edition, Morrison's profile of Quintus doesn't mention Luthor at all. I don't think it's true.
Okay, but it's something that's out there, that with Luthor giving that to Quintum, that would kind of make sense.
Yeah, I don't believe it. I don't problem okay. ending just because they had to sort of condense everything, and I think the whole point of the last battle was that Luthor realizes that he's wasted everything. He's wasted his talents on humanity, and he hasn't done anything to help humanity. So his last act of helping humanity is to bring Superman back.
I can
understand someone not liking that, but and I think in this particular story, after what Luthor's been exposed to, when he's got Superman's powers and can see the world for the first time, the way Superman does, that he decides he wants to continue that on. I don't know. I didn't have a problem with it.
I have one. This is also a thing that occurred to me when I was reading the book this morning as well, is the thing that really doesn't work for me is Lois trying to kill Superman in the beginning. She goes and sneaks off to get that gun, the kryptonite gun, saying that, you know, Superman is going to use her to breed an army of super babies or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he's gone insane. You don't have enough time and enough information.
Yeah, but they explain that.
Insane from the gas.
Right. Yeah. But no, I see what Paul's saying. It happens.
She breathed
very quickly.
The gas in and she went insane. It was sort of a passing thing. She breathed the gas.
It happens quickly, but it dissipates so quickly too. But it feels like such a, I mean, because, you know, Lois is kind of a steady supporter of Superman. To have her turn on him so quickly and then to come back into the fold so quickly, I agree with Paul.
It's just a little bit of a leap from.
But yeah, but that's the whole like fatherly Superman persona and attitude. Like, oh, I left this door open and there's this gas. I'm sorry, it made you a little crazy. Won't happen again. You know,
it turns out I was right. I am immune to kryptonite now. That's okay that you shot me, that you tried to murder me. Like,
it fits into that whole Morrison pitch from the one we talked about earlier. Is that
why would Superman
really mellow? Because at the end of the day, nothing can hurt him.
Right. Yeah,
so it's kind of like if somebody walked up and punched.
But
him
wouldn't
in the
you
face,
be like, you know, yeah, like emotionally, you know, like that your girlfriend tried to kill you, even if like you knew that it. You know, even if you were wearing a bulletproof vest, wouldn't you be kind of hurt?
No, because you know she was breathed the gas and that it made her crazy.
That's that godly, fatherly persona that he had. I mean, he's so far above humanity that of course he understands and he reasons that. I think that's an integral part of Morrison's view of this character. Yep. is that we are so much like his children that it's a father's love, not, you know, not a boyfriend girlfriend relationship. He loves
that's
Lois.
Creepy, Chris.
You know, I agree with Paul. I agree with Paul because it rides that line between like, okay, it's a father's love, but what if the father's love was directed towards an anthill and we were kind of a curiosity.
I don't like that towards Lois. But the whole point is that he knows he's never in any danger and he knows she's not really trying.
Yeah.
But he's also like, humanity is just a curiosity and the things we do are just kind of like, oh, so she should.
It's a curiosity for the Kryptonian astronauts. And that's what he comes to the realization of, now when I'm gone, I wanted you to be, you know, to tend to the flock.
But that's just naive. That's too trusting.
Well, yeah, that's one of the things that, you know, also lends to, you know, Superman's, he sees the good. He wants to see the good in everyone.
I'm just saying I don't trust astronauts. That's a personal issue. It stems back to E.T. I don't really want to talk about it.
All right, so there's clearly a lot of things going on in this film. You can move the discussion down to the comment section at fanboy.com, which is where you can go to check out all the shows we do, and you can find comment section on this show. You can talk about what you thought about the film. It'll be interesting to see because it's such a seminal work that actually a surprising amount of people don't like, and just those people are wrong.
They're wrong. They and Ryan's girlfriend are wrong.
I'm just waiting for the first comment to be overrated.
Will that be from your girlfriend?
No, she's not on the site. What are you talking about? She reads my columns and then leaves.
Yeah. Well, wonderful for you and for her. So check out fanboy.com. We do a weekly show about the new book. We do interviews. We do all kinds of things. Chris does all kinds of things for us. Paul writes for us. Ryan writes for us. It's a fun time. Till the next film, which is the summer, I believe, right? Green Lantern's in June. So we'll be back for June. We'll reconvene the panel in June.
We should do a supplemental. We should like do a recap of the last 10, because I like talking to you.
We could possibly do that. We could possibly. Yeah. We'll discuss this offline. They don't need to be in on the meetings.
So, breaking the fourth wall.
We should talk about Young Justice, because that's been a lot of fun.
Consider doing some recaps of the animated shows that have been coming on, because there's also Avengers, which is quite popular as well. So we'll talk.
Yeah, but that's Marvel. We only talk about Marvel. DC.
All right, we'll discuss this offline, people. All right, until next time. I'm Connor.
I'm Chris.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Professor Ryan.
He needs a new girlfriend.
Yeah, gotta dump that girl.
She'll come around. She hasn't seen all the other movies.
He was bright. He made suns and broke them up on a space anvil. That's awesome.
faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound, this amazing stranger from the planet Krypton, the Man of Steel, Superman!